Dímelo, it's your girl La Loca from Radio 103.9, and you're about to hear the exclusive audio of our latest Stage 17 performance. For the full video, head over to stage17nyc.com.
Exclusive interviews and performances from the world of music, movies, politics, and more. All on one stage. From the heart of New York City, Cumulus Media presents Live from Stage 17.
Welcome to Deconstructed with Kevin Ross. I'm Mark Clark from Hanging Downtown on Radio 103.9, of course. 7 to midnight, Kevin, man. I'm telling you, we've been banging your first single.
Thank you, man.
We're so excited to have you here performing for us, man.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let me shake the hand. Let me test the hem of the garment, man. So, if anybody was meant to do this, I think you would fit into that category. You're from D.C.
Yeah.
Went to Ellington.
Ellington School of the Arts. Yeah.
Yeah. And then went to Berklee.
Yeah, Berklee College of Music in Boston, Mass.
Look at you, man. Just born to do this.
Well, you know.
When did you know that you were going to get into music?
Sophomore year of high school.
What happened?
I believe we always did a Motown review during the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you had to audition for, like, the you know, the parts that you had to play. And so I felt like, I was like, you know, I really want to do Stevie Wonder this year. So I landed the part, and, like, when I got in front of the people and I had the glasses on, you know, doing this and singing the songs. And
what'd you
that,
do, like, man? What'd you do? Give us a little bit, man.
Oh, gosh.
I know you were, you know, I know you were just 10.
Yeah.
Your voice might have been different.
No, I was.
What did you sing?
I sang My Sharia Moore. Oh,
man, I know you can still give us a something. Give us some, man. I know.
Got you. My Sharia Moore, lovely as a summer day. My Sharia Moore, distant as the Milky Way. Oh, my Sharia Moore, pretty little one that I adore. You're the only girl my heart beats for. Baby, how I wish that you were mine. La, 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 la.
Man, right, awesome. Right. Awesome. Kevin Ross. Again, you were born for this, man.
Thank you.
Awesome. So were you the kid that sang in church? Were you the kid that sang around the house? Or were you the quiet kid that nobody knew, like in the movie? Then it came to the talent show, and Big Mama's like, I didn't know the baby could even sing. Was it
that? I was the latter. I was definitely the quiet, introverted. Because, I mean, my whole dad's side of the family sang.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So my dad sang at weddings and all kinds of, like, formal functions. So I was always there as the shadow, just taking it in as a kid.
Mm.
I didn't know how to... you know, like, master it or figure it out or even where to start.
Wow. And
so, you know, I practiced a lot in my room. It started in school first, just, you know, trying out for stuff in choir. And, like, slowly but surely, I was like, I try out for this solo and stuff like that. And then my dad became a deacon at a church by the time that I was in middle school. And that's what really kind of drove us into church heavy and
wow.
Start singing in choir and stuff like that.
You were the soloist guy?
No, not at first.
In church?
Not at first. You know what?
On men's day.
Now, the crazy thing is that my first solo in church was, like, so, like, disheartening. Actually, it was, like, super disheartening because, like, it seemed like the congregation liked it, but, like, the lady that, like, came up to minister, like, she was, like, bashing me. She was just like, someone that isn't in the spirit and he's not trained. I was like, whoa, wait
a minute.
Oh,
my goodness.
This is a lot to deal with. I am only 11, 12 years old right now.
Wow.
I don't know nothing about no spirit. I just know that I like the songs and it felt great. You know, my relationship with God came later.
Dang, you know, she just called you out in church at 11?
Yeah, no, definitely called me out in church. But
that's messed up,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
She should have got kicked off of the deacon board for that. She should have got voted out on that day. Your dad should have stepped up.
I mean, I get where she was coming from. It's just like, but the kids, though? Like,
what'd you do? You sang Prince? Is that what happened? You sang some Prince?
Nah.
Darling Nikki, we're going to do this song, Jesus.
I sang Praise Is What I Do.
Yeah.
By Shekinah Glory, right?
Nice.
So I did it, but you know what I mean? I'm 11, 12 years old, so I don't know much about church. I don't know how that even goes. It's just the fact that the choir director said, you sound good, cool, go up there and sing this thing.
And you know what? You sound good, man. Forget what she says, you know?
No, nah, I mean, I learned later and understood where she was coming from. It's just the fact of, you know,
Encourage the youth.
Yeah, you encourage the youth. Yeah. You know what I mean? The relationship with God, it comes in time because it's a personal one. Right. You know? So, yeah.
So the performance arts school, I think when we think about like Ellington, you know, I actually live in the D.C. area. I come back and forth, so I know, you know, I know about the area.
Yes, sir.
With the performance arts high schools, you always think of fame. Is it like that? Y'all like beating on the tables and somebody with trumpet at the lunchroom, or is it not really that
way? It's not as dramatic.
You know, guys jumping and doing plie.
Nah, it wasn't like no musical numbers every time we went to school.
But there is a lot. There's a tradition of a lot of great artists coming
through.
Most
definitely. I mean, from Dave Chappelle to Denise Graves. So, I mean, even now with like Corey Hawkins and Samara Wiley. I mean, you know, these are actors and comedians and great opera singers that have come through Duke Ellington. And I mean, I remember I read in my freshman year at Ellington, Denise Graves has said, this is a great place for foundation. Right. I thought that, you know, Ellington, after 4 years, I'm going to be a superstar. This is it. I'm on my way. You know what I mean? But I mean, in hindsight, it definitely was the foundation because it gave us a facility to facilitate our abilities. You know, I mean, a lot of us coming in at 13, 14 years old, we don't know what we're capable of. We don't know what to do with our lives. You know, so Ellington was very important to me, and I think it saved a lot of our lives in the D.C. area.
And what did it, so then you go from Ellington to Berkeley, but give us one thing that it did, like, was it the competition or was it the understanding on, okay, I'm going to choose this song and perform? What did it give you as you got ready for Berkeley?
I mean, I think Ellington was definitely competitive. It was a level of competitiveness where you felt like it was the best of the best in the city, you know, so you definitely wanted to bring your A game every day. The thing that I learned the most about Ellington, which brought me to Berklee College of Music, was that we were doing all of these classical songs from 200 or 300 years ago. And these are beautiful songs, but what fascinated me the most was the composers. You know, the people that I'm like, man, they've been dead for over 200 years. And I'm like, we still singing their songs.
That's pretty powerful.
I want to be that guy.
The question becomes, will DJ Khaled be remembered in 200 years? That's when you start. Is that really going
to? That's yet to be debated now.
In 200 years, will they be? Yeah. Here's another one. I don't know. Quincy Jones, yes. I don't know. Khaled, I don't know. So now you're at Berklee. I mean,
Shout out to Khaled, man.
We got love for Khaled. I'm just saying. You know, so now you're Berklee.
Yeah.
And so the kids who go to Ellington, who go to Berklee, you're in an elite class now. Because like Juilliard, Berklee, these are the schools. Everybody wants to do that. And you actually got a partial scholarship to Berklee.
Yeah, it was the big fish in the small pond syndrome, you know, leaving Ellington. You know, you like, oh, man, I'm the best vocalist, blah, 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 blah. And then you go to Berklee and you're like, nah, I'm not. Like, I remember my first concert I went to, and I didn't realize that it was students in the concert. So it was this guy who came on stage, like, super seized and, like, just killing it, just everywhere, just demolishing. I'm like, man, this is a hell of a teacher. Like, who is this faculty member? I need to be in his class. And they was like, nah, he's a student. He's 18 years old. I said, wait a minute. I don't think I should be here. Just because the level of talent, you're dealing with geniuses, you're dealing with prodigies, you know what I mean, from all over the world. So the competition is completely different. It's not about at Berklee. It wasn't about being the best. Mm. It was about figuring out how good are you, being the best that you can be, building your own world, you know what I mean? What is your sound? What is your identity? And I think that was the most important thing that I learned as far as building relationships and building a network at Berklee, because you just never know who was going to be who at the end of the day.
I love that because I think that's what some artists don't understand that. Like, you know, they get a hit and they think that I'm the best, and then it's a kind of a rude awakening. But at least at Berklee, you get, like, the reality of music.
Yeah.
And you realize, like you said, you know, being my best self is probably what's more important than being quote unquote the best. Cause what is the best?
Yeah. Cause you'll never be the best.
So then you go on the road with, speaking of one of the best in R&B, he gets the box now as Maxwell.
Yes.
And so what was that like? So now you go, you know, as a background singer, you're kind of watching the guy. And do you have to learn how to not be too whatever and how to move within that world?
Well, here's the thing about that. I never was selected as a background singer.
Okay.
I, you know, went down to New York like hundreds of times trying to audition for backgrounds for like Usher and Alicia Keys and stuff like that. Now, granted, I'm 19, 20 years old. You can only imagine as far as like how I looked back then, as far as like I probably looked 12. And so I would like audition and I'm like, dang, I'm gonna suck because like they not messing with me. They not rocking with me. I ain't getting a call back. No, nothing. So, you know, That's the way the story went. So
That happens, what's the advice when you try out all the time and you don't get it? what are the top three things people say? You know, like, oh, and, you know, wear different shoes next time. Or what's the, what do they say, you know, to kind of like give you something, you know.
After they sing, it's like, we're kind of looking for something different, but, you know,
good luck.
God bless. I'm like, dang, okay, well, cool. You know,
something
what I mean?
Different.
Yeah, they're looking for something different. You don't fit the ideal, the image of, you know, what we had in mind. Mm. You know, sometimes they just be like, next.
So you get next. You know what? In the middle of singing, getting next must suck. And I cheat. Next. Oh, yeah. Damn. Okay. All right. My next tune. I remember. I saw Anthony Hamilton was one of the background singers for Maxwell at one point of one of the things.
And even D'Angelo. Going further back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that didn't work out. But you did an EP.
Yeah, called Dialogue in the Gray.
And that got some traction, though.
It got a little traction. I mean, and it was all due to the Maxwell tour. You know, I opened up for Maxwell. That was my first tour. Mm-hmm. I went from being an artist that performed maybe once every 3 months to performing 5 times a week.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So that's a huge difference. It was a huge shift. And I definitely went into prayer, and I'm like, listen, God, like, if this is for me, like, then this tour will reveal everything that I need to know about me as a man and me as an artist, whether I need to hang up my shoes and try something different. Or keep pursuing it. He definitely revealed to me that I need to keep pursuing it. So it was a great experience. And he taught me a lot on the road.
I like how we tell God what he need to do. This tour, this was
that's
God.
Facts. That's facts.
In this
that's
tour.
Facts. That's facts.
It's going to, what I'm going to do is, and it's going to reveal. And he's like, maybe.
Yeah. That's,
maybe not.
You're absolutely right about that.
And
you're
so what, right. what did you learn from seeing, like, you know, the seasoned guy that you aspired to kind of have that success? What did you learn seeing that night in and night out about performance and about, like, you know, the game?
Mostly adapting to the crowd, adapting to the audience, understanding that every night is different, right? And they pay good money to see him. Mm. So he has to adapt. He has to make sure that they're comfortable, to make sure that they get their money's worth. Most importantly, Maxwell is a business. He's a businessman. So I kept seeing these, like, crates, and it just kept saying, Maxwell, Maxwell. I'm like, dang, Maxwell got a lot of stuff or luggage or whatever. And they was like, no, he owns his backline. But it's not a lot of artists or a lot of black artists that own their backline. You know, but he tours so much every year that it's great to invest in the lights and the sound, and anything that's on that stage comes with him. That's
wow.
it. You know,
wow.
So I think that was great for me to understand. There was a story where we were in somewhere in Louisiana, right? And so we're like backstage, everybody in the finished sound check, and we're getting dressed, and they're like, oh my gosh, Maxwell's tour bus is on fire, right? So I'm like, oh, snap. So we all go outside. It's like a blaze. So everybody's worried, like, where's Max? Where's everybody that's supposed to be on this bus? So I look to my left, and Max over there filming it, smiling and stuff like, this is crazy. He's like, I'm like, this is your bus. But sure enough, the next day, a new bus came.
Man.
Come on, thank God for that insurance.
Oops, a fire. Wow, that's cool, man. Okay, so then after that experience, kind of got a taste of not being out every night, not performing every week.
Well, I mean, literally, it was kind of like a whirlwind. I mean, I did the Maxwell tour, and then I did the Neo tour like a month later. Then I did a Glade commercial. And so that Glade commercial gave me a lot of visibility as far as to people anticipating something from me within that next year.
Was there a Glade song? Was there a Glade song attached to this?
It was a song. Yeah, it was a song. It was called This Is My Wish.
Can we just hear a little bit? I'm just saying, this is a Glade song.
Oh, man, here we go.
So now when I do Glade, I'm going to think of you, man. Just after I tear up a bathroom, I'm going to be thinking of you. Oh, man.
So it went a little something like this. Fill the air with joyful noise. Ring the bells and raise your voice. Let there be peace on earth. Let there be peace on earth. Lift your light and let it shine. Let it shine, shine, shine. Let every voice be heard. Let there be peace on earth. So that's the
nice,
the
yes.
Glade song.
All right, I'm gonna get some Glade right now.
Bottom candles.
Man, love it.
But it went extremely well. It actually surprised everybody.
That's
shocked. It definitely shocked
a hot song,
me.
Man.
But it went on to sell like hundreds of thousands of copies of the record, and like it was doing numbers. Like
it was we're doing numbers.
It was
Kevin.
Doing numbers. Like it landed me a Billboard. Wow. It was a lot. It was a lot going on. And I think that it just caught everybody off guard. But the most important thing that I learned throughout that time was I didn't have my business in order.
Mm.
Even though I was so creative and we got all this stuff going on, I didn't have my business in order. So I had to suffer. I had to go through a year of suffering and recalibrating, or taking my power back and redistributing it to people that deserved it or that I felt like that I could trust them with. And so that's a process, but I found my victory in the valley. So
All right. Amen now. Yeah. Preaching a little bit. You know, good thing you didn't become like the equivalent of the Popeyes lady. No disrespect. Like you were the Glade guy. You wanted to be a star, but you ended up being the Glade guy.
But you know what?
The check would have been nice, but I don't know if that would have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was just so determined. Yeah. You know what I mean? My vision was always bigger than just a commercial. I wasn't expecting a commercial. So when it happened and when it did what it did, I mean, it was just a part of the story. It's a part of the narrative.
I love it, man. So. I love the fact that you understand the business, that you got it. I think these, you know, a lot of artists have these things happen and they keep getting in the cycle. Yeah. And when they say what you don't learn from, you repeat. Yeah. It sounds like you learn from your experience.
I mean, see, I believe in falling. I just don't believe in falling twice, right?
Love it.
Or falling the same way twice.
There we go.
So, I mean, you know, it's about the lessons that you learn. You know, when God sends you through a valley or he sends you through a dark place, you really have to look for the lesson.
Message! I mean? So now we have The Awakening.
Yes, yeah.
Not an EP, the album.
The full-length album, yeah.
Full-length album. Kevin Ross, your first single's doing very well.
Yeah, went number one, Urban AC. So
I know we're banging it. I know we're on the list, man, because that's
you,
one
man.
Of our cuts. One of our cuts, man.
Thank you, man.
And you know, I always say this. I do a show called, what's my show called? Hanging Downtown. And so, you know, the new artists, I play a lot of established artists, you know, hits that are, you know, stars.
Most definitely.
And so the good thing I love when we add a new artist is you're competing with, you know, Marvin Gaye and Charlie Wilson. And you know what I mean? And so when we add a song, you really get to, you know, not everybody can make it.
Yeah.
And I love it when a young artist comes in like yourself who could be played on our format and also played on younger formats, and the song works. And I think it just says a lot about the artistry. And then now, you know, we're going to see you do your thing live.
Yeah.
And I heard you warming up. It's like, it's really exciting because the knock against a lot of the new artists is that they can't do it live. They can't bring the performance. But you obviously can. And a lot of people in your genre cannot.
Uh-oh.
I'm not going to mention names. You know what I mean? And so that is kind of, it's almost like, you know, we're in a world where you're almost not even rewarded for having this talent that you have. But it's great. It's great when you do.
I will speak on this.
Speak on it, Mac Dime. That's an old hip-hop reference for those who know what I'm talking about.
R&B is probably one of the most progressive genres there ever is in the history of music, right? It traces back to the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and we've had great artists along the way, and now, present day, it feels like it's in a weird little place, a stagnant place. But to speak on that, I think that with social media and everything being so saturated, I think that it doesn't give enough artists time to really sit with themselves and identify who they are, what their platform is, and how important that platform is, right? I believe God gives each and every person a territory, right? And so with that territory, you're held accountable. You're held responsible for that territory, what you do, what you say, how you act, right? It's your life. And so for R&B music, it's always been about lifestyle. It's always been about to reflect the time through our individual perspective, right? So I'm not saying that we've lost our way. I just think that as the newcomers are coming in, we have to be confident to say, cool, once we become a front runner, we have to be held accountable for what it is to push the genre forward even more. R&B will never die. The faces will change. The cadences will change. The music, the beat behind it will change. But the soul and the feel of it. Listen, your favorite hip-hop artists sing their hooks. You know what I'm saying? So it hasn't gone anywhere. It's just a fact of, you know, in every decade, R&B has this way of trying to figure itself out, you know. And so now with a lot of great new artists coming in like Ro James and Major, and I mean even Luke James, you know, these are representatives that have great talent, you know, immense talent that we're still redefining and actually deconstructing ourselves in order to see where we fit along in the fabric of society and the fabric of music and how our contributions are going to play out in music history.
You find out Kevin Ross is preaching up in here. Go find that old lady from the church and let her know that Reverend Kevin Ross is preaching up in here. You're absolutely right. And I love your project because, you know, your project. So I'm listening today and I'm, you know, okay, Kevin Ross. Okay, let's see what we're talking about. See, because again, you understand you have to be saying something.
Yeah.
And, you know, like first cut, be great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Pick You Up. Yeah. You know, you have these songs that I jotted down a couple, but that are great songs, but also a message of uplifting, a message of responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, again, that's sadly sometimes what's missing. And you're absolutely right. You know, it's never going to die. There'll just be times when sometimes those messages don't get played on the radio.
Yeah. It's
just a strip club song.
It's a battle.
Yeah.
It's a battle that's bigger than us. As far as individuals, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that nobody will ever understand. I didn't understand it until I actually got into the music business. It's a beast.
Right. And the business part is a big part.
And there are powers that be that fight against it. It's not the fact that there aren't messages that are being created.
That's true.
Just the fact of who's deciding whether it's distributed or not. Right. So there's so many great artists that fall by the wayside, no matter what color, creed, ethnicity, gender, whatever it is. There's so many messages that just get pushed to the side. Now, it's up to the artist as far as mentally, spiritually, how determined you are, right? You can't let fear or anyone distorting your mindset to get in the way. Either fear is going to hinder you or it's going to propel you. But it's your choice at the end of the day, and you have to decide. I always use this analogy as far as people say, oh, well, it's taking too long. They're shelving me. They're leaving me out to die, blah, 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 blah. And it's like you really have to take your career into your own hands, right? Even with time. Let's say I have a friend. She's about to be a pharmacist, right? She spent 4 years majoring in biology, another 4 years doing pharmacy school. Now she has to do 2 more years of fellowship or residency. That's 10 years in school to be a pharmacist before she sees any type of monetary value of being an actual PharmD. So that's the same thing with our careers. The same thing with our dreams. You have to put in the work, and it's going to take time.
You know what? As a 50-year-old, I can sleep calmly at night knowing that we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right. Kevin Ross, damn you. We're going to be all right. I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
Give it up for Deconstructed, guys. This is what it's all about. This is what it's about. An opportunity to see the artist, to flesh out his beliefs, where he's coming from, what he believes in. And, man, you've been an amazing one of our first. You are our first. You're our virgin.
Wow.
So hopefully we weren't rough with you.
Yeah.
And I will call you tomorrow. Make sure you're okay. And let you know we ain't dating. But no, it's in stores, right? Drop.
It is in stores. It came out Friday. Make sure that you guys download it off of iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Tidal, you name it. I mean, really, I just want people to discover the music, to discover me, follow my journey. Make sure you follow me at Kevin Ross Music, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, you name it. I'm on it.
Okay. And so, you know, of course, you know, I haven't even checked the time because it's been so amazing. So I think we'll wrap it up. And, Kevin, again, you've been amazing, man.
Sir.
I'm so excited about the future. Again, what I love about this is, you know, the fact that it's a catch-22. Used to be a guy your age would be played on the younger formats, and you'd come over us a little later. But what I love is you got a whole lifetime. We got a whole lifetime to hear your growth and hear what you do.
Absolutely.
And I think, man, as long as you keep doing what you're doing, man, you're going to be around the whole lifetime. So, man, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all the thought and the talent you put into your project. Thank you for all the honesty and the realness you had with us here on our first event here, man. We appreciate you. And we'll support you whenever you do, all right? All right, y'all. Kevin Ross. Give it up for Kevin Ross. Deconstructed on Radio 103.9.
Thanks for listening to Live from Stage 17. We hope you enjoyed the show. Now head over to Stage17NYC.com for more exclusive Stage 17 content.